As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Buffalo Beat. My name is Joe Biscaglia, and thank you for joining me on this off-season episode. We are getting closer to the NFL Combine, if you can believe it. It's in only a couple of weeks, and just like last week when we had friend of the show Matt Bove on the pod, I figure it's another good time to bring another friend of the show on this episode. So I got a thing for Matt. Matt Fairburn was the co-host for a long time. Matt Bove helped out one season and was on last week. And now none other than Matt Perino of Syracuse.com and the Shout podcast, making, I believe, his second Buffalo Beat appearance.
I believe so.
Thanks for coming on, buddy.
Anytime, dude. You know, you put up that signal. I'm here to be the Robin to your Batman on the Buffalo Beat. And listen, the depth chart runs deep in the Matt department on the Buffalo Beat. So I feel honored to be one of the Matts that gets a chance to come on and talk some Bills with you.
One Matt trips. We're gonna run out a wide receiver formation just to have all three of you on one side and see who really takes it and runs with it here.
Yeah, I feel like I'd be like, that'd be actually a fun exercise to see like who would be what in the formation. Like, I think Bove would be kind of like the tight end, right? He could block off of the line.
We don't call him right tackle Bove for nothing.
Okay. I think Fairburn could be like, he could be a little bit of a trickster out of the slot. Like he's got a lot of different things he can do. You can kind of move in inside, move outside. I feel like I'm just going to run deep every time. I'm going to one juke move. I'm going to be the Gabriel Davis of the situation.
Okay. That could be a good segue. Although I think Fairburn, he's like slow and methodical. He's quicker, but he's methodical is the word I'm looking for. Have you ever played basketball with him?
No.
Okay. He's not like a super like quick mover, but like he'll lull you to sleep and he'll beat you.
Okay.
Yeah. That's his kind of,
it's good scouting report.
So I'm not having you on the show just to talk about Matt Fairburn's basketball skills and everything like that. I am getting you on the show to, you know, just get in some takes on the off season. I think the way that we approached this with Matt Bove when we had him on last week was just kind of leaving it open ended and just kind of going from there. So I feel like it, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So I guess where I'll start is for you when you're coming into this offseason, the combine, whether it's free agency, the draft, what is the number one thing on the brain of Matt Perino as it pertains to the Buffalo Bills and what they need to do this offseason?
So I'm really interested to see like the priority, right? Like I think that we're going to learn a lot about their priorities pretty early on here, right? Like if you go back to the Matt Milano year, and I know that came together right before the free agency started, you know, locking him into that deal when we all thought that all of those guys were going to be gone. I mean, Darrell Williams, John Feliciano, Milano, they brought them all back. You know, they really prioritized keeping their core group together, right? And now they have another couple of those decisions looming. Like, you know, obviously Tremaine Edmonds and Jordan Poyer are different conversations, but a big part of their core. And if you make the decision even on one of those guys to bring them back, what does that mean for what they can do? More importantly, in my estimation, on the offensive side of the ball, whether it be adding, you know, offensive line pieces, weapons around Josh Allen, you can do that in the draft. And, you know, for lack of a better term, it's free to do that, right? You get draft picks, they're assets, but you get a chance to add players to your team without giving up anything, and they're cost controlled. So you got to do that part of it too. But I also think that if you can get, you know, 20, 25 million under the salary cap limit, there are some moves that you can make to improve your roster. And you know, I think you did a really good job of this recently, putting out a piece about, you know, all of the free agents that the Bills are staring at here. This is not going to be the same team next year. There's work to be done. And on the offensive side of the ball, the recipe that they've used in previous years, going out and really bulking up the numbers on the offensive line through free agency, it hit early on, like 19 and 20. They did a really good job bringing in certain guys. They fit certain profiles, and it worked. I felt like last year it didn't as much. I mean, the David Questenberries of the world, the Greg Van Rotens of the world, they really do need to be urgent in their approach, as Sean McDermott always says, in the draft, of having a plan for players. There can't be any more Cody Fords. And conversely, there can't be any more Kyer Elams too. You draft a player in this draft upcoming, you have to have a plan for them to play, because now that you're in this, the thick of this Josh Allen contract, you really need the draft to offer you in year one starters, maybe not seven starters, but at least three or four.
Yeah. I think that is a key piece to what has to happen with the build. And we have seen them take it slow with so many first, second, third round picks over the course of their tenure. Really, the only exceptions to the rule have been Tremaine Edmonds, Josh Allen, even though they didn't really want to his rookie season.
Mm-hmm. Rousseau.
Tre'Davious White, Greg Rousseau, and Deion Dawkins, but they didn't want to do it with Deion Dawkins either in his first right. season. So maybe you can throw Matt Milano in the mix, but he had to like unseat Ramon Humbert three different times in his rookie year. So it's not as though that was like a flat in. Okay, he needs to be in the lineup. He had to earn it. So that maybe line of thinking has to switch a little bit. I'm right there with you. I am interested by the overall priority conversation. You know, we touched a great deal on the offense with Bove last week, but I am really enthralled in what their overwhelming decisions are going to be for this offseason, because, you know, they have a ton of free agents. They have 24 in total. I don't think that many of them will be like super big contracts on the open market. I think really the only two that I would bank on for that would be Edmonds and Poyer. Singletary might get a little bit, but it's tough because it's a really stacked running back class in the draft, and it's a really stacked running back class in free agency too. So he might fall short there. So I think the rest of their free agents, you could bring them back on low cost deals if you really wanted to. So I am the thing that has been on my brain since I had the chat with Bove last week is, are they going to approach this like they did the 2020 offseason, where they feel like this is a team that was right on the cusp that just ran out of gas emotionally in this postseason, and then adding pieces on top of that? Or are they going to format this thing more like the 2021 offseason, where they, you know, keep their main guys in place, but they're cycling through a lot of different positions and refreshing a lot of different spots? Or is it a hybrid of the two? So that is what I tend to think, that maybe they'll try to roll it in and you know, try and refresh one or two spots, because I do think that they really like what they did with a you know, 14 win team from this past year. But all in all, it's going to be very interesting to see how Brandon Bean does this under the scope of that Josh Allen contract that you brought in.
That's so interesting to think about the scope of this, because Brandon Bean has not been shy about admitting that he hears, you know, he's not on social media, but he hears it when the masses are calling for things, right? And the masses right now are calling for, you know, new coordinators, like flipping everything, like on the roster. Obviously, he's not going to do that. But I think that that maybe gets baked into the approach in how they decide to bring people back. So priorities is a fun conversation because I've been thinking so much over the last month about Tremaine Edmonds, because I feel like that's the biggest domino that has to fall that tells us what they're going to do once free agency hits and then maybe into the draft. Because if you don't re-sign Tremaine Edmonds, ideally you have to draft his replacement. I mean, I don't think you could go into this year saying, all right, we're good with Terrell Bernard. We saw enough in year one that, you know, plug and play him at middle linebacker this season. Like, I don't think that you're there.
You're saying AJ Klein doesn't do it for you either?
It might do it for them, but I don't know. So one thing I was thinking about that maybe the Bills tip their hand a little bit in what they're going to do. And listen, I'm just soundboarding here. We're vibing. I'm not saying this definitively is happening, but the Al Holcomb addition to the coaching staff to me is really intriguing because I feel like you go out and bring him in for two reasons. Number one, you want another voice in that linebacker room. And why do you need a voice in that linebacker room when you have two of the best coverage linebackers in the league? Maybe you're flipping that room a little bit with Matt Milano as a veteran, and you're going to draft somebody and you're going to ask Al Holcomb to come in here whose specialty is at the linebacker position, help Bobby Babich run that room and develop not only Terrell Bernard, but maybe another eventual piece. Now, we also talk about what is the long-term viability of a 64-year-old Leslie Frazier as the defensive coordinator, right? Like, we've all been pounding the table for him to be a head coach for years. It hasn't happened. And now turning 64 years old, it's just how much longer does he personally want to do it? And it's crazy to think about this, Joe. We were talking about this on a show a couple weeks ago when the Holcomb thing happened. I think Holcomb walks in the door and becomes your best in-house replacement for Leslie Frazier. Mm-hmm. I mean, I probably would have said Eric Washington a year ago. He was the senior defensive assistant that got added onto his job title. You wonder if that's going to get stripped away from him after, you know, maybe a disappointing year on the defensive line outside of Von Miller and the lack of development at a few key positions. But I think that the conversation starts this offseason with Tremaine Edmonds and what they're going to do there.
I'm with you on that. Just because I think the Al Holcomb conversation is interesting, I will see your Al Holcomb as the defensive coordinator in waiting and raise you a Bobby Babich. Because Bobby Babich, for years now, has reminded me of the type of trajectory that Sean McDermott himself was on in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And he's a bright guy. He runs practices after the fact. After the actual practice with a lot of the defenders, he's the one, like, he's the defensive coordinator of those post-practice meetings that they ran quite a bit in the 2020-2021 seasons. He's done a great job with the safeties when he was the safeties coach. The linebackers last year, Tremaine Edmonds had his best season as a pro, and then Matt Milano is just an insane talent, as we've seen over the years, and those two guys were great last season. So that's another thing for him. And it's not a coincidence that they've been moving him around the defensive coaching responsibilities, because I do think that they believe in his talent. And I just wonder if maybe once Leslie is done, that maybe it's Bobby Babich that's the one that kicks into gear as defensive coordinator. But that's a conversation for a different day.
No, but I also like spitballing that. And yeah. You know, Bobby Babich moving into that role, and you kind of have a ready-made spot for Al Holcomb on a defense, and maybe exactly. you keep him with that senior defensive assistant, you know, title, and you kind of go from there. I definitely think the Holcomb deal for me, it's a first move toward maybe them admitting they got to do things a little bit differently. And it's not an overhaul. I mean, they have a new Joe Dana, the new safeties coach. We can dive into him at some point this offseason and what that could potentially mean, as they have to look at that position group and talk about, all right, you're going to have to start developing some players there now as well, especially if you start that process by not bringing back Jordan Poyer. But I think that, you know, it's so funny. There's this – if the offense and the defense were looking at, you know, in the mirror – like through a mirror at each other, right? There's not a lot of similarities with the way that they run things. Ken Dorsey, Brian Dable before him, super multiple. They want to be different things. There's so many variations of personnel packages and, you know, just from a identity standpoint, maybe it was to their detriment because they didn't land on an identity this last year. And Stephon Diggs even said that was maybe one of the problems. The defense knows what its identity is. It wants to play out of that base nickel formation. And maybe they're getting to the point where do we have to be a little bit more multiple because now teams are able to game plan for that look. And while they don't have to, you know, substitutions aren't as big of a deal, maybe there you have to throw a little bit more at opposing offenses to kind of keep them off balance, because in the big games against the big offenses, this defense has struggled the last couple of years.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And I think the, just to go down the rabbit hole a bit more with you, I don't know if they're going to all of a sudden flip into, like, you know, sometimes 4-3 look, sometimes stand up edge rushers look, 3-4 base looks. I don't think they'll do that, but I do wonder if they're going to play a higher percentage of man-to-man coverage, because that seems to be a specialty of Kyrie Elam, and that they have not had a second cornerback that could capably play man coverage since Tre'Davious White has been in the league. It's always been Levi Wallace or, you know, Kevin Johnson or Sharice Wright or EJ Gaines, Dane Jackson. Like, these guys are much better for zone. And, you know, because it could hide them a little bit. But Tre'Davious White can play man. Kyir Elam can play man. So I wonder if maybe because they failed to get pressure on the opposing quarterback once Von Miller went down, that maybe if they try to blitz just a touch more next season, play a bit more man-to-man, and maybe that's a way they shift things to make themselves a little bit more multiple. But I do want to get back to Edmonds, because I'm with you. I think he is the key to the entire offseason. And when you look at the moves that they can make to not only get themselves under the cap, but also to give themselves some breathing room and some operating room, it's all going to come basically via restructuring of their biggest contracts, right? Because, I mean, their three top candidates to cut this year are like Nyheim Hines, Isaiah McKenzie, and Tim Settle. And there's really not anybody else. Nyheim Hines, and who wound up being traded for Zach Moss, a former third rounder and a fifth round pick. So not exactly the greatest optics to cut him a year after you just trade a guy who you picked on day two plus another fifth round pick this year. So I do wonder what their goal is there, but the extreme likelihood is the majority of their operating room is going to happen based on restructures. We're talking Josh Allen, Von Miller, Stephon Diggs. Maybe you throw Tre'Davious White in there. Maybe you throw Taron Johnson as a restructure in there. Maybe it comes in the form of, you know, giving extensions to Daquan Jones, or giving an extension to Micah Hyde, just something to give them some short-term relief. But I do think that they'll have enough moves to get themselves in a spot where they can make one substantial signing, semi-substantial signing, and one middle-tier signing, and then kind of fill in from there. And I am of the belief that Tremaine Edmonds is very much in the running to be that substantial signing of the offseason. The way that I've kind of looked at him in the scope of what they're trying to do, both short and long term, is they're inevitably going to have turnover at the safety position, right? I mean, Jordan Poyer is a free agent. Micah Hyde is turning 33 in December. And he's going to be a free agent. Even if you negotiate a one-year extension with Micah Hyde, the end is coming for his career in Buffalo. So I almost look at it like, is this an opportunity to kind of flip it from what you did in the early stages of this build under Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott, where they allocated a bunch of cap space to the safety position to fill both of those, filled in linebacker with young guys on rookie deals that they really liked in Milano and Edmonds that they knew that they would eventually have to pay. And now it's kind of flipping to where Edmonds and Milano might be the pay guys. And then you draft safeties to kind of backfill it and develop that way. And then the other sneaky piece of this is Matt Milano is a free agent after 2024. And in 2025, that will be his age 31 season. And this is a guy who's dealt with injuries for a lot of his career. So are you going to want to go into a situation where you're going to be without Poyer, you're soon going to be without Hyde, you might be without Matt Milano in a couple of years? Do you really want to focus your entire defense on Terrell Bernard and a bunch of rookie safeties? I'm not sold on that. So Edmonds still yet to turn 25, turns 25 on May 2nd, having about 5 to 7 years left on his prime. To me, you can probably lock in a deal, not a Roquan Smith type deal. I know that that's what everyone's kind of fearing about. He's not the caliber of player as Roquan Smith. He's a great player. He's not that type of player. So I think they could get in the door with a cap hit from somewhere between 8 to 12 million for this season, where it rises in future seasons. And then that could be kind of a way to take their first sizable chunk of cap space and accomplish all of their goals that they need to do throughout the rest of the defense, because it's time for them to stop investing so heavily in defense in the draft. Like, they have been doing it nonstop for years now. The only offensive piece that they have invested in with the first round pick under Brandon Bean was Josh Allen. So, like, it's time to invest on that side of the ball. And the best way to do that, in my mind, is to reinvest in a guy that has become a star in your scheme in Tremaine Edmonds. So that's why I am probably bullish on them re-signing him, but it also has to – they also have to make sure that someone just doesn't come in free agency and blow him out of the water.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So what does the deal look like for Edmonds in a perfect world, big picture? Like 472, 5, like 90?
I'd sign him 5, yeah.
5?
I would sign him 5 just because that brings you up to his age 30 season and gets you through the Milano stuff. And then once you draft your safeties or whatnot, then that would be the time to potentially pay them. And then you just kind of flip it forward from there.
And you can make an argument, if you can get in the door with that cap hit that you're talking about, you could also restructure, because he's so young, you could restructure that deal next year and minimize the cap hit next year as well. So, yeah, I definitely think that as long as the money works, like, to that extent, Edmonds is important. I just think that because of how the last couple of seasons have ended, like, you have to make sure that, number one, you know that he is a cornerstone of this defense. Like, look at the Kansas City model. Like, who have they paid, right? They paid one guy on defense, Chris Jones. Mm-hmm. And I guess you could make the argument they paid Frank Clark as well.
They did pay Tyrann Mathieu up until they let him go last year.
Right. So this past year, they made some hard decisions, like, around. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's hard decisions for the Bills to make around, you know, maybe not this offseason, but definitely next offseason. Like, if Tre'Davious White, you know, isn't the same guy now a year removed from the injury, and he continues to have games where he struggles. I mean, you're paying him to be an all-pro cornerback. And if he's not that version of that player by the end of this upcoming season, you know, that's unfortunately a conversation that you're going to have in the building. Ed Oliver's coming back on 10 plus million right now. I think you and I would probably make an argument that Ed Oliver maybe is a little bit more important to what they do defensively than maybe the stats. And I don't want to speak for you, but I guess I would make that argument that maybe the stats show all the time. But I also think $10 million is a lot of money. And what he's going to sign and a new deal is going to be a lot of money. Are you willing to allocate the resources there for a guy that's not a sack producer? Mm-hmm. It's a legitimate question, I think.
I think they with Oliver, that is another compelling decision that they have to make. I'm with you. I've liked Ed Oliver and in their scheme, and you know, he sets up teammates a lot more than you would think he does in both the run and pass rushing game. But I do understand that the sour taste left in everybody's mouth is the fact that the Bengals had a backup offensive line and Daquan Jones wasn't available. Von Miller obviously wasn't available, and Ed Oliver had his worst game of the year. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a completely fair thing to point out, but you also have to bring up that the rest of his season, even early on when he was battling a high ankle sprain, I thought he was damn good this season, despite maybe the sack statistics not getting there. So yeah, it's a definite conversation to be had. I do think that, you know, Daquan Jones potentially coming off the books next year can help them pay Ed Oliver, but mm-hmm. you know, I mean, he's going to be up there in age too. So, but there is kind of a restructure of that defensive tackle room coming in the next two off seasons. I just don't know if it's going to be this one. Maybe they add a piece, maybe a late round pick, maybe a free agent or something, or maybe they just spin it forward for one more year with Jordan Phillips and say, all right, we liked what these four did last year, which, you know, I mean, the production they got out of the defensive tackle group in 2022 was the best that they've gotten out of their defensive tackles since they've invested heavily in it. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if maybe, you know, they see Jordan Phillips going through another injury, maybe that is a chance to bring him back on the vet min, and then go, okay, we're good with this group, but you know, eventually they have to make another sort of investment to that defensive tackle group. But the priority list is so, it's so interesting, because I do think that they should allocate far more of their resources onto the offensive side. And they have done a lot to the defensive side because they have kind of held this belief like, oh, we've got Josh Allen, we've got Stephon Diggs, we've got a franchise left tackle, and we've got a great center. We'll figure the rest of it out. I think that's kind of been their mindset. But with how things are trending in the NFL, how this high-powered, high-paid defense has been going along, and you know, not exactly, you know, defenses have proven to not exactly win championships most recently. You can get by with a middle of the road to slightly above average defense rather than a top five or top seven defense. And I think that's the kind of world that the Bills need to pivot towards as opposed to what they had been doing. And I think the best way to go about that would be just do one re-sign this year. And then the rest of the offseason, you're going all offense. Like, we're talking, address the offensive line. I think they desperately need to bring in some veteran competition for Spencer Brown. And mm-hmm. you're not going to do that with a Roger Saffold type contract. I think they need to invest, like, remember Ty Nsekhe?
Yeah.
Like that sort of deal, not Ty Nsekhe in general, but someone who has starting experience, who shows some flashes to be a good starter that can legitimately,
I mean, what Darrell Williams was too. I mean, they brought him in to in the I same
mean,
way.
I mean, he stunk his last year here. If we're being
yeah, that's sure. No, I just meant like the idea around signing him. Like
he was signed,
and he wasn't getting a starter job out of the gate. He had to earn it, and he ended up pushing a lot of people down. And then they had some versatility with him. But yeah, I totally agree with that entire point.
Yeah. It's just a matter of them being able to get Edmund signed and him not getting blown away by an offer, because I do think he is, they view him in the building, and they always have, you know, this, you know how they talk about him
mm-hmm.
as this cornerstone guy. Like they have defended him year after year and saying, he makes such an impact on the game. You guys don't see it. He makes such an impact on the game, even though he's not picking off passes a ton. I mean, he's just his overall athleticism, his length, and the stuff that he can do in coverage, how fluid he is as a mover, just really provides headaches to opposing quarterbacks. And that's going to be important for them, especially if they're going to leave themselves a little bit more bare on the back seven now by blitzing a bit more to really bring on some pressure. So I think he's a key piece. Where do you land on Jordan Poyer? Let's get into that, because I haven't talked about him for a while.
So I think that first and foremost, like, obviously it's going to be the market. Like, I think, I can't remember who said it now. It might've been Sal the other day, but it's a good point. Like, the Bills basically were upfront with how they view Jordan Poyer. They're willing to let him at the number that he thinks he's worth find a new place to play football. And so I think that that's what Drew Rosenhaus has been busy doing over the course of the last couple of weeks, is probably talking to teams and figuring out, all right, what is the market out there? And listen, there's been crazy contracts handed out over the course of the last couple of off seasons. The salary cap is starting to boom. I don't think, you know, signing an all-pro safety, despite the age, is out of the realm of possibility for a team that wants to add a playmaker in the secondary, a guy that's going to be a locker room leader that's come in and help change your culture, especially for a younger team. You know, you look at a, you know, a team like that maybe is getting close, that wants to kind of bring in good. I mean, going back to the Cleveland Browns, if they had the money, like, that would be something that I think would be interesting. And so he's looking probably for what, like $30 million guaranteed in the contract. The Bills are never going to get close to that.
No shot.
And I also don't know if he's going to necessarily get that, even though he wants it. So I'm to the point now where, you know, there's probably going to be a level of frustration. Like, we've talked so many times, like, he's been a guy that year after year after year has been the company guy. He's taken the pay cuts. He's taken the contracts that are, you know, probably could have gotten more elsewhere, but re-upped to kind of be cap friendly with the team. And a lot of that happened before he had his real boom, when he had the all-pro year. But all things being the same, they love him in the building. But I just don't think that from the roster construction angle, do you want to allocate the resources it's going to take to keep him because of what you have to do elsewhere. And to our earlier conversation, the work you still have to do on offense. Like, mm-hmm. I think they have to add a legitimate receiver, whether that be in the first round of the draft or whether it be one of these higher end guys in the free agent market. There's a couple of names. It's not a great free agent class at wide receiver, but I think DJ Chark is super interesting. You know, there's still Odell Beckham Jr. floating out there, and that's going to continue to be a conversation as long as Von Miller's here.
Especially with the new receivers coach.
Yeah, yeah, very interesting.
That's kind of a thing. I don't read that much into it. I know people are like, "Oh my God, it's Odell's positional, or he knows Odell, or whatever." But no,
he hasn't been with Odell in a while, and I also think, was he in Odell in with the Giants and it didn't work out? Then he was with Cleveland and didn't work out. So maybe he's not a fan of Adam Henry anymore. Who knows what's going on with Odell Beckham Jr.? My point being, you, as good as this defense has been, you have to start eyeing the future anyway. And I feel like in a lot of ways, the Poyer, their decision on Poyer, to me, completely mirrors Kansas City's decision on Tyrann Mathieu. When he left, he was still at the top of his game, arguably, or close to it. Mm-hmm. And they just made a decision that they couldn't allocate the resources at that position. They could find somebody in the draft, develop them, and the drop-off wasn't going to be enough to where you have to worry about it. So I don't know. It's a tough conversation, because in a perfect world, of course, I think they'd love to have him back and run it back with that same group one more time and see if they can stay healthy. I just don't think it's healthy team building.
That Kansas City example is a good one. And I remember reading that they felt the decline on Mathieu was coming, and mm-hmm. they wanted to get ahead of it, which I think is smart. And I will say, with the Poyer point, he is a free agent. He has been an all-pro in the past, but there are certain factors that cannot be ignored with him. The age is one of them, and I know he hates it and brings it up every time he's at the podium when it talks about his future, but he is turning 32 on April 25th. That is that is a factor, and it is a factor to NFL teams and in how much they will be willing to pay him. Mm-hmm. The second factor is he suffered 6 different injuries since the start of training camp in 2022. 6. 2 elbows.
Well, when you put it like that.
2 elbows, a concussion, ribs. Let's see. 2 elbows, concussion, ribs. There was the what am I missing here? 2 elbows, concussion. I had this all written down in my safety in my safety review. Ankle? Was there an ankle? But there were 6 in total because I've gone back and you look up the injury designations from the Bills injury report throughout the year, and he has missed games and time for 6 different reasons. Mm-hmm. So that is a factor.
He had a knee injury.
The knee. That's right. The knee. The knee that was reported on before the Bengals game in the regular season. That was like that he's been playing on this, you know, partially torn or whatever the injury was. And like, right. That's just another thing with him. So, and they always say the best ability is availability. And that's a stupid cliche, but NFL teams abide by that. Mm-hmm. The other sneaky aspect to this is Jordan Poyer's postseason was not good. And I don't know if that was a cumulative effect from all of the injuries. Maybe it was the emotional toil from going through what the entire organization went through. But against Miami, I thought he was poor. And I think against the Bengals, he was even worse. He just looked hesitant. He wasn't firing down the way that he normally does. He wasn't anticipating things the way that he does. Maybe a bit of a step slow. And like I said, it's fair to say that it was a cumulative effect from the injuries, but you also wonder, like, okay, is that the sign that it's coming? The decline is coming, or is it just a two off in this instance? Because I do think he had a relatively good rest of a season, great start to the year where he picked off everything, and then those went away, and then it kind of boiled into this injuries after injuries after injuries, and then a poor postseason. So, yeah, I think I'm with you. I don't know that it makes sense to bring him back. And their number would have to be really good for me to do it, to take up a chunk of their cap space that they should be using elsewhere, I think would be a bit of a stretch. Now, the only caveat I'll say to this is if Tremaine Edmonds signs elsewhere, I think you can make a major case to say, okay, Jordan Poyer, here is a 1-year contract with 2 void years to get your cap hit down to, you know, somewhere between $6 to $10 million. And, you know, we want to pair you up with Hyde for one more go around here.
And what does he get? So what does he get take home on that deal?
Probably like 12, something like that. 12, 13. But that is even rich for him.
I don't think he's going to be down with that either.
Yeah, exactly. And there's also a bit of a history element involved here, too, because I remember those Carolina teams where they were so good defensively when Bean was there and when they were really at the top of the heap. But they just kept hanging on to the safeties again and again, and they kept getting aging and eventually they became a problem. And mm-hmm. I do wonder if there's an element of wanting to avoid that situation in general with the Bills.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that you have to have a plan for the replacement anyway, even if that falls in line. But mm-hmm. I'd also say that if Edmonds doesn't work out and he signs elsewhere, I'd almost say completely pivot and put all of that money into the offense anyway.
Sure.
And whether it be offensive linemen, like, I don't think you could bring in enough offensive linemen to make sure you land at the best ultimate optimal 5. This season. If that still includes Mitch Morse and Deion Dawkins, like, we could also talk about that as well. Like, I thought Mitch Morse was solid. Like, he's always like really solid. Like, he's not elite, but he kind of falls into that second tier. He has some really good games. He has some games where I'm like, oh man, he got a little bit worked up there, but that's just part of the deal with him. I thought Deion Dawkins took a significant step back this past
season.
Yeah,
I agree.
And I think part of that is probably to do with like just the complications of learning an entire new, you know, deal with the offensive line coach. I mean, Roger Saffold said he expects everything to be better next year because guys will have a full offseason to have understood Cromer's techniques, the fundamentals that he teaches, and then apply that in their offseason training. They'll come back like, man, that is a, that's an indictment of this past year. Like, this was the big year of the Super Bowl window. And I'm not sitting here saying like, go, you know, extend yourself every which way to bring back Bobby Johnson. I don't think that he was necessarily some cure all, but to flip the script on Dawkins, who was your best player down the stretch on offense, not named Josh Allen, in my estimation, in 2021, if you go back, I think we've talked about that. He had a 10-game stretch there where he looked like an all-pro.
When he came back from COVID against the Patriots, he was on fire. He completely dominated Matt Judon, and then that was like the launching point for the rest of his season.
Did you see that at one point all season long this year? Player?
He took a legitimate step back, and I'm with you actually for the reason about why it happened, because I remember talking to Dion during his breakout in 2019 when, you know, his second season was not great. I mean, and it was kind of getting to be one of those years where like, okay, is Dion going to live up to that draft capital, or is he going to be someone that they just get rid of in a couple of seasons? And he stepped all the way up, and that was well timed with Bobby Johnson's appointment of the offensive line coach. And I remember talking to Dion that season and him alluding to just a different way that Bobby Johnson wanted his offensive tackles to pass block and how much it helped Dion. It was something to do with the angle he wanted them to take, because some offensive line coaches want you to go like straight back, and others want you to kind of do an arc. And, you know, I think Bobby Johnson wanted the arc to allow Deion Dawkins to have him to really take advantage of the type of skills that he has. So I do think there is quite a bit to do with that. But there was also other pieces of the puzzle with Dawkins where it wasn't always perfect, even as a run blocker. I think that was a minor step back this season. And for the first time since that 2018 year, I thought to myself, are we on the path to Deion Dawkins eventually becoming a guard? Because I do think he would thrive in there, but I don't think we're there yet. I don't think they're there yet. And that's another one of these sneaky things in to begin the year. I think there's going to be a lot of attention on what Ken Dorsey does, rightfully so. I think there's going to be a lot of attention on what Aaron Cromer does, rightfully so, because, you know, the Bills got by with their offensive line for years under Bobby Johnson. And last year it was a huge weakness. And, you know, part of that is not Aaron Cromer's fault, because they didn't have any depth to speak of. Right. And Roger Saffold was one of the worst starting guards in the entire NFL this past season. And they didn't expect that. They thought, oh, they were getting a veteran with experience, but he was a liability almost every week. And you couple that with his main replacements being either Greg Van Roten or David Quesenberry, like, that's just not going to fly. So I don't want to bail out Cromer completely, but there's going to be mighty amounts of attention on both of those guys, especially if they add as significantly as we think they are going to on the offensive side of the ball this season. But yeah, I'm with you totally on the offensive line. It's it needs some addressing in a few different spots.
I've never been more team guard at 27 than I am this year, because I think, first of all, I feel like there's going to be a couple players that fit the mold for what they want, day one starters. I mean, I've been looking at Osiris, Torrance. We're obviously going to get into this over the next couple of months. And then that John Michael Schmitz, who has some guard center flexibility. I love what the Eagles did with Landon Dickerson, drafting a guy that could come in, be the left guard in between two studs while your future Hall of Fame center finishes out his career. And then, you know, you have a really good starter at that spot. And then when Kelsey walks away, you move him back to his natural position of center. Schmitz is interesting from that department for me. But either way, there's other names out there as well. There's some tackles that might be in range that you might want to think about. To your point, if you're thinking about moving Deion Dawkins, the guard, I don't think you should wait on that.
I don't think they're going to do it this year.
I don't either.
That's even in their consideration.
Okay. But you're right. So then that takes it out of the conversation, because if it's not even in the consideration, then you roll the dice again and you bet on Deion bouncing back and being more of the version 2021.
Yep.
But if you are thinking about that in the slightest, I don't wait on that, because I think you want to get your long-term answer at left tackle figured out as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. And I think you draft a first round left tackle, whoever that ends up being. Like, I'm thinking about a Rashawn Slater in that 20-ish range. If you could find that version of that player this year, you swing Deion Dawkins over to left guard. All of a sudden, that helps the left tackle. That, because Deion Dawkins is a veteran. I mean, he's going to have to learn a new position. There's some parts in there that are complicated. But I think no matter what happens, you have to figure out left guard, left tackle, left guard, center. You have to put the optimal three out there at those spots and then piece together the other two, to your point, bring in competition for Spencer Brown, bring in competition for Ryan Bates, and figure it out. And who knows, maybe Ryan Bates, they figured, I mean, you could talk about this more than me, you're more in the, you know, the weeds with, you know, watching tape and knowing the responsibility specifically of players. Was Ryan Bates not better at left guard than he was at right guard?
He was definitely better. And this is a point that Beauvais and I talked about last week too. Like, there's a legitimate argument to flipping him back over to the left side. And the only reason he wasn't at left guard is because that's where Saffold played his entire career, right, or most of his career, definitely in Tennessee. And so it was kind of like, oh, experienced guy, put him where he's always started and we should get good results, but they didn't. And the craziest part was, like, every single year that McDermott has been the head coach of the team, they have made one legitimate change to their starting lineup within the first like month or two of the season, except for this past year, because they didn't have anybody. They could not replace anyone. Like, they were hoping that Ike Butker maybe could get to that point down the road, but you know, he was rehabbing almost the entire season, and then once he got back, it was healthy scratchville for him. So it was mind-boggling to me that they doubled down on bringing Bates back, taking him out of the position where he was great to where they wanted to match this contract. And then, you know, once Saffold was struggling at the amount that he did, not trying to help both of them. I will say Bates, his final 13 games, I thought were really good. His first four were horrible. So okay. I think they're on the way up there. But I am totally with you on the guard center train. And it is something that I've been pounding the table for the last two drafts. Mm-hmm. They have, you know, they have always kind of been approaching the Mitch Moore situation as like, all right, let's see what this next year brings. Let's see what this next year brings. And he's been really good the last 2 years, but we're only a couple years removed about wondering whether or not he was going to be on the team.
Right.
He took a pay cut to stay, and you know, even though that they'll never like say, oh, that was a pay cut, that they it was something that was agreed upon by all parties. But there's no way Mitch Morse is agreeing to it if the Bills don't go, okay, we want you to take a pay cut.
Right.
Like, that's not a situation that, like, hey, Matt Parrino, do you want to take less money to do your job this next year? Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. I'm good with that. But the guard center point is such a good one. And that's what kind of holds me back to them taking a guard specific player in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to take someone that has the ability to come in and take over at center once Mitch Morse is done, that's where you provide the value. They have been, you know, punting at the guard position since Brandon Bean took over. You know, just random low cost free agent here. Maybe we'll resign John Feliciano for a little bit of money. Maybe we'll resign Ryan Bates for a little bit of money. Maybe we'll bring in Roger Saffold for a little bit of money. But, you know, for the most part, all of their resources have gone to left tackle, right tackle, and center. Guard, get by. That has been their stance, albeit. But the center point is a good one. There's guys like you brought up, Schmitz, Luke Mauk from North Dakota State, who played tackle, but I think he can play all three interior spots. You've got Joe Tippmann from Wisconsin, Steve Avila from TCU. Like, there are these And then there's kind of a drop off after that tier. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there are some players there where you can get them, whether it be late first, second round, third might be waiting a little bit too long for it because, you know, I'll stop talking after this. The time where they didn't do it, where it bit them the hardest, was the year that they took Greg Rousseau and Boogie Basham. Ugh. Because they took Basham, Creed Humphrey and Josh Myers both go after him. And Josh Myers has not been as good as Creed Humphrey, but
he's better than what they have.
Exactly. And it's better and it's better than Boogie Basham.
Right. Yeah, the Boogie Basham pick, honestly, like there's argument to be made that because of the ripple effects that it had and on other positions, because of guys that have hit. I mean, you could probably look at some receivers that went after that would be perfect. Like, you wouldn't have to even consider a receiver right now going in with Davis, Diggs, and whoever you could think about. Like, if they would have just sat where they picked last year, not traded back and not take James Cook, they could have gotten George Pickens, right? He went after them.
I can't remember. Taking Breece Hall.
Right. Right. So, I mean, listen, we could always play the what if, the looking back game, and that's kind of the fun of it, right? Like going back and figuring out like what teams really just found their diamonds in the rough. And like you look at the two Super Bowl teams and they found them. When they were starting a seventh round left tackle, the Eagles were. They drafted pretty much all of their players. They found a first round right tackle in Lane Johnson, who, let's be honest, like that's a unicorn. You're not going to find many of those guys.
But the Eagles also whiffed on another first-round left tackle.
Yeah, Andre Dillard. Yes, right.
So they tried.
Yes. So keep trying is the point.
Yeah.
I think I'm definitely, like, if you're not in range to get a guy that you love at 27 this year, like, and let's be honest, like, there couldn't have been universal agreement that Kyer Elam was the slam dunk pick last year, right? I just don't think that it could be that could have been the case. And then they have handled him the way they handled him his rookie season. So I think this more than ever is a year where if you can add an extra second round pick and trade back a few spots, maybe if one of the quarterbacks falls, maybe if one of the you're not going to take edge rusher, one of the positions you're not going to take. I'm all up for trading back. And then you can add multiple players, an offensive lineman, a receiver, maybe an interior defensive lineman, like all in that first 90 picks. And then you have your third round pick as well. Cause they got to throw some guys at this and try to see if they can figure out some, you know, add some puzzle pieces on both sides of the ball.
I think the point that all of us can agree on was Boogie Basham was not the answer. That has become painfully obvious as he was losing snaps to everyone in the defensive end room. And allowed Shaq Lawson to pass him, allowed AJ Epenesa to significantly pass him. And
it was a legitimate conversation. Can Kingsley Jonathan save the Bills defensive line the week of the Bengals game? Was questions I was getting.
I hear it. And it's an indictment on what Basham and Shaq Lawson and Epenesa, who kind of tailed off near the end. I thought he had a really strong start to the season. It's an indictment on what they did, but Kingsley Jonathan can play now. He might turn around and make this team next year. He was one of the last.
No, I like him. I think the indictment is on the draft Boogie picks that just happened.
Yep. 100%. All right, Matt Parrino, the time has flown. We have somehow been doing this for 50 minutes and I don't understand how, which means, you know, you brought it and I appreciate you.
Thanks for having me on, buddy.
Let everybody know where they can find all your shiz.
All of my shiz is available if you search the Shout Podcast on all the audio platforms. We stream live on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. Every Wednesday night, it's the staple show, but obviously a lot of different interviews and content coming your way with the Combine here coming up, and then obviously free agency. It's going to be big time, man. I can't wait to get out there. Interview some players, have a steak or two, have a fun week in Indy.
I've gone this whole time without calling you Matty P, and I'm now reevaluating everything.
I'm disappointed in you.
I know. I'm disappointed in myself. There's only one way to point the finger, and it's at me. But thank you so much for doing this, man. You're great. You do an awesome job over at Syracuse.com and on the Shout podcast along with Ryan Talbot. And be sure to check out all Matty P's stuff. Thanks, buddy. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Ben.
All right, so that's going to do it for this episode of the Buffalo Beat. Thank you all for listening to this episode, and we will talk to you once the NFL Combine is going and we start to see some trickling in about what maybe the Bills could do and what maybe the Bills won't do. So we will talk to you in early March. See you then.